At a later time, the Persian king, Perizes, became involved in a war concerning boundaries with the nation of the Ethelati Huns, who were called White Huns. Perizes gathered an imposing army and marched against them. The Ephthalati are one of the stock of the Huns, in fact as well as in name. However, they do not mingle with any of the Huns known to us, for they occupy a land neither adjoining nor even very near to them. But their territory lies immediately to the north of Persia. Indeed, their city, called Gorgo, is located over against the Persian frontier, and is consequently the centre of frequent contests concerning boundary lines between the two peoples. For they are not nomads like the other Hunnic peoples, but for a long period have been established in a goodly land. As a result of this, they have never made any incursion into the Roman territory, except in company with the Median army. They are the only ones amongst the Huns who have white bodies and countenances which are not ugly. It is also true that their manner of living is unlike that of their kinsmen. Nor do they live a savage life as they do, but they are ruled by one king, and since they possess a lawful constitution, they observe right and justice in their dealings, both with one another and with their neighbours, in no degree less than the Romans and the Persians. Moreover, the wealthy citizens are in the habit of attaching to themselves friends to the number of 20 or more, as the case may be, and these become permanently their banquet companions and have a share in all of their property, enjoying some kind of a common right in this matter. Then, when the man who has gathered such a company together comes to die, it is the custom that all these men be borne alive into the tomb with him. Perizes, marching against these Ephthalati, was accompanied by an ambassador, Eusebius by name, who, as it happened, had been sent to his court by the emperor Zeno. Now the Ephthalati made it appear to their enemy that they had turned to flight because they were wholly terrified by their attack, and they retired with all speed to a place which was shut on every side by precipitous mountains, and abundantly screened by a close forest of wide-spreading trees. Now, as one advanced between the mountains to a great distance, a broad way appeared in the valley, extending apparently to an indefinite distance. But at the end it had no outlet at all, but terminated in the very midst of the circle of mountains. So Perizes, with no thought at all of treachery, and forgetting that he was marching in a hostile country, continued the pursuit without the least caution. A small body of the Huns were in flight before him, while the greater part of their force, by concealing themselves in the rough country, got in the rear of the hostile army. But as they yet desired not to be seen by them, in order that they might advance well into the track, and get as far as possible in amongst the mountains, and thus be no longer able to turn back. When the Medes began to realise all this, for they now began to have a glimmering of their peril, though they refrained from speaking of the situation themselves through fear of Perizes, yet they earnestly entreated Eusebius to urge upon the king, who was completely ignorant of his own plight, that he should take counsel rather than make an untimely display of daring, and consider well whether there was any way of safety open to them. So he went before Perizes, but by no means revealed the calamity which was upon them. Instead, he began with a fable, telling how a lion once happened upon a goat, bound down and bleating on a mound of no very great height, and how the lion, bent upon making a feast of the goat, rushed forward with intent to seize him, but fell into a trench exceedingly deep, in which was a circular path, narrow and endless, for it had no outlet anywhere, which indeed the owners of the goat had constructed for this very purpose, and they had placed the goat above it to be a bait for the lion. When Perizzes heard this, a fear came over him, lest perchance the Medes had brought harm upon themselves by their pursuit of the enemy. He therefore advanced no further, but remaining where he was, began to consider the situation. By this time, the Huns were following him without any concealment, and were guarding the entrance of the place in order that their enemy might no longer be able to withdraw to the rear. Then, at last, the Persians saw clearly in what straits they were, and they felt that the situation was desperate, for they had no hope that they would ever escape from the peril. Then the king of the Ephthalati sent some of his followers to Perizzes. He unbraided him at length for his senseless foolhardiness, by which he had wantonly destroyed both himself and the Persian people. But he announced that even so, the Huns would grant him deliverance, if Perizzes should consent to prostrate himself before him as having proved himself master, and taking the oaths traditional among the Persians, should give pledges that they would never again take the field against the nation of the Ephthalati. When Perizzes heard this, he had a consultation with the Magi who were present, and inquired of them whether he must comply with the terms dictated by the enemy. The Magi replied that as to the oath, he should settle the matter according to his own pleasure. As for the rest, however, he should circumvent his enemy by craft. And they reminded him that it was the custom among the Persians to prostrate themselves before the rising sun each day. He should, therefore, watch the time closely and meet the leader of the Ephthalati at dawn, and then, turning toward the rising sun, make his obeisance. In this way, they explained, he would be able in the future to escape the ignominy of the deed. Perizzes accordingly gave the pledges concerning the peace, and prostrated himself before his foe, exactly as the Magi had suggested. And so, with the whole Median army intact, gladly retired homeward.